Meet Sven. He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 4th, 2009, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm a very wounded Scott Long.
You know, you seem like you have emotional scars this week. I don't know what the deal is.
I do.
Every time I'm on the phone with you, you just sound down, and I don't know what it is. What's the problem here? Let's get it out.
Oh, here's the thing is, I think people know that I'm the good cop in our bad cop, good cop relationship, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm feeling like I'm the bad cop.
Why? What happened? What are you talking about?
Well, you know, I just got back. My wife and I went to Dallas for a wedding, a beautiful wedding out there.
Yeah.
And remember a couple weeks ago on the show when I talked about how I was called a sexist by a very enraged woman after I had the audacity to laugh at a poker table, right? And I was kind of, taken back by that. So here's the deal. We're pulling into the parking garage at our lovely hotel in Dallas. And it's one of those kind of gate things, control. So we're already in the gate, all right? So we're actually in the garage. We're not, like, out on the street.
Right.
And a African-American gentleman walks up to me. And I only mention his race because it's germane to the rest of the story.
Okay.
He's got kind of like a white shirt on. It kind of looks like he could be, like, on the staff at the hotel.
Uh-huh.
So I stopped the car because it's a confusing little parking garage thing. And you know, maybe I did something wrong. And he comes up and he gives me the story about how he doesn't have any money and he left his cell phone in some car and he can't call anyone and he needs $2.20 for the bus to get home. All right, now, you know, the standard thing that society tells us to tell people like this is, sorry, I don't got anything.
Yeah, you don't have any cash.
You don't encourage them.
Right.
Now, of course, I've always struggled with that because, you know, kind of a nice guy and I don't like lying and, you know, $2, you know. But before I could reconcile this whole thing in my mind, Laura reaches over from the passenger side and says, oh, we don't have anything, sorry. I'm like, all right, hey, cool. So, you know, she's the bad cop and our
cop. Yeah, Laura and I have a lot in common.
Yeah, exactly, you do. So I pull away, and then this gentleman, I hear him as I'm rolling up the window, and he says this in the absolute most polite way he possibly can. Sir, you are a racist.
Oh, my God.
So in the matter of a month, I'm a sexist and a racist.
And an anti-Semite. Remember we had the Passover tournament by accident? We didn't know that it was on Passover.
So, you know, here, I'm really down here, Chris, because I know one of your big dreams when we started this magazine was to eventually be invited on the Oprah Winfrey show.
It was.
And have Oprah Winfrey, instead of giving away a stupid Pontiac to all the people in the audience, that she would give away a subscription to Annie Up magazine to all the women in the audience. And I got to tell you, when I go to Chicago next month, if I'm lucky enough for her to even acknowledge me when I pass her on the street, it's probably going to be for her to spit at me and kick me in the groin.
She won't be inviting you to be on the cover of her magazine with her this month?
I would not be on O.
We'll have her on our shoulders. Look, it's Oprah. Oprah and Annie Up. The name of the magazine that month would be AO, because Annie Up and Oprah. And
see, now you're making me feel bad, because now you're letting all the dreams out, and I've dashed them, because apparently I'm a racist and a sexist. And to make me even worse, you reminded me that I'm anti-Semite.
Yeah, I didn't mean to bring that up. I'm sorry. I was hoping that someone in the Annie Up Nation called you a racist, because then I could raise my arms in a V and in victory, because I have finally won over enough people that they're starting to dislike you, too. But that apparently isn't happening, so...
Well, you know, I tell you, the one person that's probably more hated than me in the world now is Annie Duke.
And is it hated or just not misunderstood?
I do believe it's misunderstood, but it reached a level of hate on this week's Celebrity Apprentice when Joan Rivers called her Hitler.
Oh, my God. Joan Rivers called her Hitler.
No, here's the thing.
Talk about anti-Semite.
You can laugh at a woman at a poker table, and you can turn down an African-American bum for change, but, man, don't call anybody Hitler.
Oh, my God.
That just gets people in hot water.
Did she go ballistic?
She did, but not necessarily over that, but over a lot of stuff. But here's a quick setup, because it was very poker-related on The Apprentice this week. It was a fundraising event, and Annie Duke has been saying since the beginning of the show that she's got this Rolodex of poker players that are just going to come out of the woodwork and just throw cash at the Donald and impress everybody. And I think people got scared, spooked by it. Because she brought in, like, you know, Barry Friedman paid $25,000 for a wedding dress, right? You know,
yeah.
So this week, she was in charge, and the other team decided that they could not raise the money that Annie was. But Natalie Gublis, a pro golf player.
Oh, yeah.
Pro golf player. How about golfer?
Yeah.
Duffer. Pro duffer.
Yeah. Although, you know, at the country club level, they say that we're not golfers. We like to play golf.
Oh, okay.
So,
well, very good.
So you might have been, you know, tapping into something that was a little significant there.
All right. But she came up with this ingenious idea, Chris. She's like, you know what? Hey, what if we find somebody, a poker player that hates Annie Duke, and we call them in and have them donate more to our side so she loses?
Didn't we talk about this already?
No, we talked about this at the home game.
Oh, the home game. Okay, see, we talk about so much. We talk way too much, you know? We need to separate a little bit.
But here's the thing. The name she came up with, Phil Hellmuth.
That's not smart.
Yeah, see, because her teammates on Ultimate
Team. Yeah, they're Ultimate Team, and they do the show together, and a lot of that's fake.
Well, she ended up sweet-talking somebody into believing that she was going to get lessons and stuff, and then Annie went off on this guy, whoever it was.
Can we lock the door shut, please?
Sure. Sure.
It's Annie Duke, but I suggest you turn the volume on your phone down, because I'm going to be yelling.
No,
because I want to know, what did I ever do to you that you're hooking Natalie Gublis up when she's not even on my team?
It's not great for me if I get voted off the show because she just stabbed me in the back so bad.
And I'm angry about it.
How the would you do what you did?
Let me just tell you what I know, okay? I get a call this morning. She tells me that you're playing poker against each other, okay?
Yeah, that's not what's happening. She wants to talk to people who are rivals of mine to get money from them.
She needed a coach. She's going to play against you.
She wants to talk to my rivals to get money from them in a donation task. You were play. And I suggest that you call her and say, don't ever mind me again, because that's exactly what just happened to
you. You thought I was bad.
So it ended up failing, and Annie won the challenge huge. She hit up Andy Block for $25,000 for some kind of earrings or something. And Perry Friedman again, man. That wedding is going to be outrageous.
Wow.
But so anyhow, so props to Andy Duke and props to poker players too, because this show they talked about how many of these celebrities they couldn't get people to donate, but poker players were opening their wallets.
Awesome.
For good cause. So that's a good thing too. But the reason I bring this up beyond that is the very next challenge, it was a cooking challenge. They had to cook a meal for Schwann's, you know, those little trucks that drive by and knock on your door and sell you overpriced ice cream.
Yeah.
So Annie was talking about how she's raised four kids and she's a whiz in the kitchen. So she became the chef for her team, right?
Right.
So at one point she's chopping up all these vegetables and she says, I can't make this up. I really can't. and there's proof all over the internet, probably.
Okay.
She says, I am the perfect woman. I work. I cook dinner for all my four kids, and I give a good job.
Oh, no, she didn't say
and
that.
They didn't pause. They bleeped.
Oh,
That syllable before job.
Oh,
and
no.
And they ran it twice. They ran it in the coming up after the commercials.
Well, you know, there are two kinds of jobs. So I'm kind of curious as to which one she was talking about. So I'll have to go watch the clip, I guess. But, you know, now that I think about it, I remember seeing this on a lot of the blog forums and stuff. Her name and then one of those words.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, man, how does somebody know that? Because I don't watch the show. So now you revealed it all for me.
Yeah, I tell you, it takes a lot to make Mrs. Long blush. But
my God.
She was like, did she just say that?
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. I imagine she was watching this show at home, you know, with the four kids.
Yeah.
And I can kind of imagine this discussion afterwards, like, hey, Mama. You know, hey, dinner was great tonight, by the way. I appreciate you cooking for all four of us. That was tasty. It was a new recipe or something, right? Yeah. Well, that's great, but, you know, if it's no big deal to you. Me and the other siblings were getting ready to talk, and... kind of rather you not talk about how much you like to pleasure this dude sitting next to her who's not her father. Is that too much to ask, Mom? Thanks.
Man, I wonder what Grace is like in their house. On Thanksgiving. Oh, my God. Mom, put the turkey baster down. Oh, my God. Well, anyway, you know, from one poker pro to another, I read this thing in Bluff this month. About Doyle. Have you heard this?
I have not.
Apparently, there's this website called cinemablend.com, and it lists the 100 people who are most likely to kick the bucket in 2009.
Wow.
All right. Well, apparently, Doyle Brunson is on this list. He's listed as number 16.
Number 16.
So, like, in the grand scheme of things, he's like the 16th most likeliest person to die this year.
Wow.
So, of course, he got wind of this, right? And being a gambler that he is, he's like, I want to find out who did this, and I want to give him, I'll give anybody 10 to 1
yes.
on any money that they want to put up to me.
Yes.
Because I am not dying. He said, and they said the reason why they thought he was going to die is because he was obese.
Right.
And he said, obese? You should have saw me 5 years ago when I weighed 130 more pounds before the gastric bypass.
Yeah, he's got that great little scooter stuff.
Yeah, he's got the scooter. He's got the crutch. He's got the fans. He's got the money to, you know, suck out whatever it is that's killing him.
Still plays golf?
Still plays golf. Still plays poker. He's not going anywhere. I would take those odds. I would not bet against him. But apparently, started this little list or whatever website, came forward and said, all right, man, here's a grand. I got a grand, says you're going to die.
Oh, my God.
And you know what this reminds me of? Back at the Times when you and I used to work there.
Right.
We had what's known as the death pool.
Uh-huh. Yes, yes. Pretty popular on the web.
And basically our pool, I don't know if it was different than what's on the web, but our pool was... You know, you pick somebody who you thought was going to die during the year,
right.
And then you subtract from 100 their age,
right?
and that's the points you get, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, premium on picking Britney Spears.
Yeah, like if you pick somebody who's like I picked like some guy I knew was going to be on death row, and he was only like 20 or something. So that worked out well for me. I won one year.
Technicality, most of them.
Yeah, but they had a rule called the Cosenza rule.
Oh, wow.
Where you couldn't be directly responsible for the person dying.
Yes, of course.
So, like, you couldn't kill somebody to win the death pool. So I wonder if it gets really, really close if this guy is going to go, you know, take out a contract on Doyle to win his 10 grand.
I would not be, if I was Doyle, I would not be hanging out at Hoyt Corkin's house because obviously there's not good security there. And maybe they'll get that Nancy Kerrigan goon guy.
Jeff Gillooly.
Yes, yes.
I'm sure he's looking for a job.
And try to wrap Doyle on the kneecap or something. Wow.
So, you know, Doyle, as December rolls around, beware. You know, beef up the security because we don't want this guy taking you out just to win 10 grand from you. But, I mean, can you believe it that he's on the list? And then I would put up money like that, too. Especially if I'm going to die. What do I care?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean,
if I lose, I'm dead.
Are they going to be able to collect? Yeah.
Yeah. So that's awesome. It's like a no-lose situation for Doyle. The man's a genius. This is why he's been a gambler his whole life and succeeded, because he knows he can't lose. Oh, I'm going to leave my fortune to Todd anyway. Let him pay this schmuck. Right? That's what, I mean, he's so smart.
Oh, man.
All right, I got to tell you that I'm a little disappointed in myself.
Okay. Most of us are disappointed in general.
I know. So when I'm disappointed in myself, that it's clearly a problem. You know, we got contacted by one of our listeners named Skyler. And says, Chris, you know, I heard the show last week. I can't believe that you never heard of I'll Tap You. Because I talked about that on that old Maverick show, you know, when it means put somebody all in. He says, because it's in rounders. So I was like, no. But the more I read the email, it's like, here's where it is. So let's listen to the clip, Scott.
All right.
Bet 1,000. Cool. Jake.
It's at 2,500 there. I'm going to tap you tight.
Oh, man. I can't believe that I didn't realize this. I mean, now I'm going to have to punish myself and watch rounders like 20 times over the next 5 or 6 days.
Yeah, that's gonna be tough for you. I know.
Oh man, I, when I extracted the clip from the movie today, I started watching it, and then you showed up at the house.
Yeah,
I was like, damn, I gotta pretend like I'm working now, and I had to take it off the DVD player and. Oh, man. But, yeah, it's funny that it was in the movie, but it was such a casual, quick line in the movie that I didn't really pick up on it. But I'm really disappointed in myself. I'm going to have to memorize the entire script now.
Yeah. Maybe you're going to need to wait for the special edition.
Yeah, I know. They've had, like, 3 re-releases of this damn movie. Every time Poker picks up a notch, it's like when a stock goes, They re-release it for the Oscars. All right, well, anyway, I just thought that was interesting that I missed that huge line, and it's in there. So if you want to know where it is, it's where he makes jacks up. In the movie against Teddy KGB at the end when he takes all of his money from him. So
Totally tapped him.
Well, that's the first time he tapped him. Then he tapped him again later.
That's right.
But let's move on to our Annie Up News Desk.
The Poker Players Alliance has a plan to spend $3 million lobbying Congress during this session. The Associated Press reports the alliance, which gets most of its money from the Interactive Gaming Council, believes the climate is better this session for poker-friendly legislation.
As you'll find out in a few items down, we might need them to put some of that money down here in Florida, and you'll find out why in a few minutes.
And in breaking news this morning, I saw that our good friend Senator D'Amato went off on a roll call writer who said that this issue is partisan.
Yeah.
Which, of course, when you've got a former Republican senator telling you you're wrong for saying it's a Republican issue.
Yeah.
Tough to disagree.
Yeah.
All right. The World Poker Congress, which claims to be the only organization that generates relationships between online and live poker businesses, will hold its annual meeting June 24th to 25th in Porto, Portugal. PokerListings.com reports. Keynote speaker will be World Poker Tour founder Stephen Lipscomb and Party Gaming CEO Jim Ryan.
I have no comment.
You got nothing.
I know Portugal is a fishing country, so I don't know. Bring your rod and reel.
Lipping something stallions from Crimson Tide. That's all I know.
I don't think we have any fans in Portugal.
We'll find out.
We have Portuguese fans.
Yes.
We have fans who speak Portuguese.
That's true.
From Brazil. But I don't think we have any fans in Portugal. We'll have to find out. Add them to that over 30 countries list.
Yeah, we'll see in the next free roll.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Bodog, which lost the rights to Bodog.com in a $48 million patent judgment in 2007, has regained control of the domain from First Technology.
So what did they do? They paid them off?
No, there's some kind of, they've been wheeling and dealing. Apparently, there's a number of Bodog sites out there. They also recently reacquired the one for Bodog Antigua. I believe is what it was.
Oh, okay.
They do not control Bodog Europe. It's kind of a licensing thing, went awry.
Okay, so this is good news, though?
Yeah, because remember they went from Bodog to Bodog Life. Actually, there's a step in between. But now they have Bodog, too.
So I wonder if they'll get rid of that whole campaign, the whole Bodog Life campaign, because they don't need it anymore.
I don't know.
Interesting.
Guess we'll see. And then finally, while bills to lift many of the state's restrictions on live poker work their way through the Florida legislature, an amendment to an unrelated bill would require a study of online poker and suggestions for laws to, quote, protect and provide relief to Florida's land-based poker rooms, according to gamblingcompliance.com.
Yeah, I don't know if I should freak out about this or not. I don't think I should yet.
No, I think it's too early to freak out. I think it's my guess, and what I really want to hope, is this is just kind of like a fail-safe for the paramutuals, that all these great poker bills that are going through the state, if they don't somehow get enacted, that... they'll be able to protect themselves from online poker if Senator D'Amato wins and gets it. But who knows? It's a very nebulous, one-line kind of amendment and a totally unrelated bill. So
yeah, they got more important things to worry about right now.
Yeah, let's hope.
All right, well, I hear the hotline ringing. 813-448-1120. Please call that number, and if Scott uses it, we'll spin the swag wheel of death and get you something really cool. So this clip comes from Nick in New Jersey, Joyzy, and he talks about bubble play on Singos.
Scott and Chris, this is Nick from New Jersey, and I'm calling to thank you guys so much for all that you do. And I have a question or a suggestion for a topic, and that is I've been playing a lot of Singos, and when it gets down to the bubble, I have a problem, or the problem I'm seeing is that I'm either... the table captain, and I'm calling with a second pair, and then of course I'm not table captain anymore. So either I'm taking the responsibility for knocking all the players out and making things happen when I'm the big stack, or conversely I'm the short stack, and I put my money in good, and they just don't hold up, and that's on a pretty consistent basis, the best hand just doesn't win. Wanted to see if you had any thoughts on that, particularly on bubble play, particularly around set and goes.
Well, I should be the expert on this because I bubble out of every sit and go. In fact, like two last night in these World Series steps on PokerStars.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I don't know. What kind of advice do you have?
Well, I was thinking why you don't need to be the table captain when you have your stack. Thank God you got the stack. Unless you're in a really favorable situation. I can remember playing sit and goes like Connecticut with Jason and the guys and being the massive chip leader twice. And both times being the table captain, I'm blowing it because I kept calling them with pocket sevens when they went all in, or pocket threes, or ace jack, and then I'd lose the race or whatever. So you don't necessarily always have to be the table captain when you're in that situation.
In fact, I don't think you need to.
No, I don't think you need to. At all, especially if you're that close. I know that in big tournaments and it gets closer to the bubble, you start picking off the medium stacks because they don't want to be the short stacks and that kind of thing. But you have more players to choose from, even though it is one table. It's a bigger tournament, bigger payout. And a sit and go, there's no reason to have to call these people because you have the stack and have a decent hand.
Right.
Yeah. And if you're the short stack, then there's really, you're not doing anything wrong. You're telling us on the clip that you're getting it in with a good hand, and you're just losing inevitably to them. So that's just bad luck, really. But really, the best advice here is to not feel like you have to call down these short stacks just to get into the money. That's baloney. You're going to get into the money if you have the big stack anyway. So let them duke it out between them, try to get a big stack, and then fight them off later,
know? Absolutely.
The goal in these things are, they say, first is what's most important. But really, in sit and goes, you want to get your money. You know what I mean? In a big tournament, you're playing for that huge payday so that you can retire someday. But in these little sit and goes, you don't want to damage getting your money back just because you feel like a table captain. That's how I feel. I don't know.
Hey, I totally agree.
All right. Well, then there's no reason. No reason to talk anymore.
I'm trying to reinvent my,
You're trying to agree with me. You want to get that non-racist, non-anti-Semitic car?
Exactly,
yeah. Okay. All right. Well, then I'm going to spin the wheel for you.
All right. Congratulations, Nick. You got a copy of Internet Texas Hold'em from InternetTexasHold'em.com, a wonderful book that may be able to help you figure out how to tackle these sit-and-go bubble
players. I tell you, this wheel, it is just like clairvoyant. It knows where it's going to have to stop to give someone a poignant gift.
That's true.
I'm totally impressed with this wheel, man.
So get in on the ESP and call us at 813-448-1120.
I should be on Price is Right, spin that big wheel. I'll get on a dollar every time.
I'm happy that Sam's not here anymore because that was just ridiculous.
Yeah, that was not.
Half-ass spin last week.
All right, well, we got a mailbag letter here.
Okay, this comes from Matt Moody, a longtime listener. Kind of similar to the hotline clip. He wants to know how to play at the final table with a big but not dominant stack. He said he was recently playing in a live free roll with rebuys and add-ons. Start with 2,000 chips, immediately add on for 2,000 chips for $10. You can also double rebuy for $20. So 4,000 chips. So if you go all in and there's action behind it, it doesn't matter if the most chips are the players left in hand. Rebuy, stop at round 5. So anyhow, he says it's the third time he's played in the tournament. His main question is, though, what should I be focusing on the final table in a tournament like this? There are only two other players at the table I was even remotely concerned with, and I've outplayed them in the past. I had around 80,000 in chips when the final table started. Blinds were only 2,000, 4,000. I wasn't the chip leader, but there wasn't a dominant chip stack at the table either.
Well, at the end of the letter, too, he also says, with that kind of stack, should you have been more aggressive,
mm-hmm.
right? Knowing that whenever I make a final table, and I make them often live, I always make it with one big blind left. I don't know if I can answer this question properly.
And, I make it right to the bubble with one big blind left, so we really are the wrong people to answer.
So our answer is go call someone who... No, really, I think that, to be honest, yes, I think that when you're at the final table and you have the big stack, you need to be more aggressive because at this point, these guys are all interested in making the top three. You're the only one that can't be broke at the table. They don't want to fool with you unless they absolutely have to. And at that point, you're using your leverage of a stack and re-raising. And I would think that you need to be more aggressive in this situation. That's a lot of chips. You're there. You're the tournament leader. You're the chip leader for a reason. And people don't want to screw with you unless they have an all-in situation. And then you can either get away from it or, you know, play the odds. So I would play the big stack pretty aggressively at a final table.
Yeah, and probably avoid the other stacks that are similar to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean,
he says here top five pay out of the final, so it's really a double or nothing final table at this point.
Yeah,
and you're above even in chips. So
yeah, I would be aggressive here just because, you know, they don't want to go out so quickly because they only pay top five, so there's still three or four or five spots left that aren't going to get money, and you can use that to your advantage because they know you're the only one that can bust, that can't go broke. So I would be aggressive with it. I'm
someday
doing all
we'll
the answers today.
Someday we'll be there. All right, spin
the
wheel.
You're a little gun shy. I'll spin the wheel.
Matt, you win a wonderful set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from GreatPokerHands.com. Send us your address. We'll get that swag right out. And if you, too, want to be featured on a future mailbag on the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars.com, send an email to podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com.
Way to plug, buddy.
Yeah. I know who breads my butter.
Let's solve a mystery today.
Greetings, this is Columbo at PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery. The case of the Chinese takeout. It's the 27K, and we have about 4,300 in chips, the small stack, at the table. The blinds are 5,100, so our M is just over 28 still, although the blinds are about to go up. There are four folds to us in the cutoff, and we look down at 8 of spades, 8 of hearts. And I'm going to raise to 300 with a wired pair.
I can't imagine it could be that easy.
Not when you're the short stack, it isn't. The button folds, but the small blind raises to 800, and the big blind folds. I'm going to call here. I have position, and I have a pair. I don't want to get any more money in pre-flop when my M is over 20, and I'm leaving myself 3,500 behind. The 800 is now nearly 20% of my stack, though, so you could make an argument for pushing.
Did I make a good call here?
The flop is 3 of diamonds, 7 of clubs, ace of hearts, and the small blind checks. Now, do you want to try and take this away, or are you just trying to get to the showdown?
I think we decided that we would bet, but there is a case to check because this guy's got a big stack, and he could be check-raising us, and he was asking in the mystery to say, do you want to just go to showdown if you can? Maybe you do in this situation, because if you bet and he raises, what are you going to do? So there's a case for both sides of this, I think. But we originally said we'd bet. So if we're going to bet, and I think on the forum, a couple of guys are talking about betting out, too. One said shove, and the other one said bet about two-thirds of the pot or so. That's basically the gist of what people said, if they said they were going to bet.
Right.
So if I'm going to bet, I probably would bet about two-thirds or half the pot. But I may check here, too, just for fear of the check raise.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, if you check here, and then they check on the turn, then you can make your bet.
Yeah, then you can feel a little more comfortable.
Yeah. That probably won't happen because this guy re-raised out of small blind pre-flop and probably has a big hand and is not going
right.
to let you take it down for free. But, you know, that's another way of looking at it.
And, you know, we don't like to, we never encourage people to learn poker from what they see on TV. But when you do watch pros play and they have an ace and they hit an ace on the flop, unless it's a really scary board, a lot of times they check.
Yeah.
And this is not a scary board.
No.
So this guy could have an ace. So just, you know, if you're going to bet, I would bet enough that you can get away from it. And if you're not going to bet, see what he does on the turn. If he doesn't bet then he doesn't have the ace. So let's see what part two says.
Right. Welcome back. Okay, here's a hand where I made a very marginal call pre-flop, and now either I have to take this away or give it up. I can't really play for pot control because I've already got 20% of my chips in their pre-flop. And if he's a good player, he's going to put me to the test relatively quickly on the turn.
We have to assume he's not crazy.
The alternative is to take the hand away now, but there are two problems here, too. It's rarely correct to try and do this on the flop, take it away from the pre-flop raiser, especially a pre-flop re-raiser, and the amount to do it would be another 25% of my stack. That would leave me with less than 10 big blinds, but it may look more credible than a shove. The third option, which is to check behind, and if he bets the turn, given the same two options, assuming he will bet about 1,000 to 1,700, I'm in the same position, only he has control, in which case I either have a great read or I fold.
Oh, I don't know, sir. When you give someone two bad choices, it's harder to track intent.
Because of the stack sizes, I'm going to take the aggressive line and make that bet myself. The logic is if I'm going to call 1,000, I might as well bet the 1,000. And if he doesn't have an ace, I push him off the hand. he check raises me all in. Well, I tried to take it away, and basically I got owned.
We can't be right all the time, but we can make up for it later.
I reluctantly fold down to my 10 big blinds and play short stack poker. Until next time, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com reminding you that there's nothing wrong with trying to get to a showdown.
Oh.
Yep.
The check raise.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he had to have like ace, king, right. or something, or even a set maybe. Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? He made a bet and paid for it. See, that's the thing about it too is eights and nines, man. I hate those hands. Yeah. I hate them. Whenever I get them, I say, okay, I'm going to lose some money on this hand. As soon as I get it, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to lose some money with these nines because inevitably I'm going to bet and then the flop's going to come, but they're going to shove and I'm going to be like, yeah, I lost. I lost money with these nines because there's a jack and a 10 on the board.
Yeah, it's exactly what always happens. It's never like in this situation with an ace or king. It's always like if you have nines, there's always a 10 that comes.
Yeah, yeah.
Or tens, there's always a jack.
Yeah. So, you know, this guy probably had ace king or ace queen or something like that, but the re-raise. So, sorry that you didn't get away from it for cheaper, but, you know, that's why it's a mystery.
Remember Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
All right, I'm ready for this main topic.
This is your bread and butter.
Not only was I looking forward to power tips for Limit Hold'em because I like Limit Hold'em, but lately I've been getting some shots taken at me by the nation. I'd say that I'm this tight, predictable, fold-to-anything kind of player, which is true like 98% of the time, but not when it comes to Limit Hold'em. I'm a completely different player when it comes to Limit Hold'em.
Let it go, Scott. Let it go. Let your feelings go.
But anyway, Wednesday night, 9 p.m. on PokerStars.com will be our free roll for Limit Hold'em.
Yep.
Show up and win a wonderful seat in our next Apes event and meet some friends from around the world.
If you want the details, go to anteupmagazine.com/apes, A-I-P-S, and you'll find all the details there, including our password and buy-ins and schedules and past winners and all kinds of good stuff. So I'm going to let you start it off because you are the limit god. I am the mere, you know, grasshopper. So
yeah, you want me to lead off so you can check raise me?
Yeah, exactly. You're going to punch, I'm going to counterpunch.
All right, cool. All right, here we go. First of all, it's not no limit. You can't push people off of hands. Limit is all about getting the most bets when you have the best hand, saving the most bets when you don't. I think that's the biggest thing when I see no limit people that are so used to, oh, he's bluffing, I'm going to push all in. And when you push that $4 in, it doesn't really shake the same kind of fear as that stack of $200 that you got on the limit table.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm going to say that, no, you can't push them off their hands, but you really need to look for ways to make players behind you call like 2 or 3 bets cold. In other words, you know, this will surely thin the field and define their hands if they're calling you from behind, calling 2 or 3 bets cold. Pre-flop, I'll give an example. You're in the small blind, the button raises, there's 3 callers. You hit the flop good, so you check it, hoping that it checks around to the button who you expect's going to bet out. It works that way. He bets out, now you make it 2 to go. Because you have to think about who's going to do the betting in this round and then see if you can use it to your advantage. Now that the button's bet, now you make it 2 bets, and the guy on your left can only call if he's got a serious draw or a made hand already. So it kind of defines their hands as well as your own, and that's a way to sort of make it expensive for people to play. So
you can't
go all in, like you said, but you can try to make it as expensive as possible to force people out.
See, and that's why I like Limit. It makes it a little more academic. It's a little more frustrating.
Yeah, there's more thinking involved.
But it's more academic. You have to get the same effect that you would by pushing all in. You have to think cleverly.
It's a science.
Exactly.
All right.
Science, not an art.
Not an art.
Very good. All right, my second tip. Make the most of those river calls. Make most of those river calls. It's almost always a good idea to call that last bet on the river. Even if you think you're beat, you often have the right pot odds to do it. As Jennifer Harmon says, you only have to be right once out of 10 times to make calling $4 into a $40 pot correct. So, you know, you have to know your opponent, of course. So if you you're really sure you're beat, then maybe you fold. Or if you got like nothing that you think can win, like a four high, you bust a draw. But for the most part, throw that bet in, and if you're right.
I want to play in the home game that has a $40 pot on the river in limit where we just got to put $4 in to win it. If I'm getting 10 to 1 of my money every time on the river, I'm calling every bet. I mean, that's insane. But yeah, I agree with that. But here's the thing. River calls, yes, but raised after you bet, no. So, you know how you're talking about you want to get a bet or not, and you're betting yep. the river for value. You know, don't be afraid to fold if you bet on the river and someone raises you and you were value betting and your hand isn't that good, because limit is all about saving bets. So if you're getting raised on the river after you bet, you're probably beat unless you have a monster hand. So if you're value betting with like top pair or second pair, you might want to throw it away.
Or you'd be have somebody listen to this power tip knowing that you need to raise on the river because you're going to get somebody to lay it down.
That's true. So, you know, that try that out on me on Apes. If I bet on the river and you raise me, see if I fold.
All right, my final power tip for limit hold'em. Raise to slow down the action, misdirect, and to get free cards. In no limit, a raise can become catastrophic since you're reopening the betting and someone can move all in on you. But in limit, the downside is minimized. Raising will slow down your opponents with better hands, save you some bets. It also lets you misdirect so your opponents don't know what you have, and you can control the action if you're on a draw. It's especially powerful to get a free card.
Well, you read that really well.
I did. Thank you. I should have practiced a bit more. I was working more on the banner this week, so I kind of let the main topics go.
All right, but here's the thing. Instead, you can also check call when you're drawing to a straight or a flush with multiple opponents. You want as many people in there as possible in the pot so you have the odds to draw, and you don't want to scare anyone off. So as opposed to, you know, what you were saying, where you want to raise to slow down the action or whatever, in this case, you wouldn't mind just check calling, too, because you're drawing. So it's kind of the converse of
yin and the yang.
Yeah, exactly. Well-balanced.
But that's the reason I'm much more aggressive in the limit, because the risk is downside. Obviously, you don't want to go crazy because, again, it's all about saving bets and making the right bets.
Right.
But when you have people guessing where you are, or your the raise helps control the action, particularly if you're on a draw. I love the free card move. And
Should we explain the free card move?
It's essentially, you know, if let's say you have a we'll use a basic example. If you're on a flush draw and you're on the button, and there's a bet out, and you raise because you're the last act, and then you get some callers, then people are going to usually you hear that, you know, particularly the old people at the table. I check to the razor.
Check to the razor.
And if that happens and it works like a charm, which sometimes almost always it does, it comes around. If you miss that flush card on the turn, now you can just wrap the table
and see the
and
river
get a free shot.
So you're basically getting half price, exactly. Essentially what it is, but it's a free card. So love that move. Lee Jones taught us that. We bring it up on the show often.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it works, but you got to be in position too.
Yeah,
don't do it under the gun.
Yeah. All right. Well, once again, the free roll is Wednesday night, 9 p.m. on PokerStars.com. Come out and play and win a seat, and we'll see you in the next Apes event.
Hi, this is Team PokerStars Pro Vanessa Russo, and you're listening to the Ante Up PokerCast. You gotta fight for your right
to play. All right, well, we talked about power tips for limit in the main topic, so it's only natural that I plucked a limit hold'em hand out of the Hand of the Week bin for this week's Hand of the Week.
But what's unnatural is that you're not doing the analysis, since you're the limit holding guy.
But I have done analysis.
You have? So do I just sit here and listen to you do
it
all by yourself?
Yeah, just phone it in if you like.
I'll phone it in.
If you want to go order lunch for us or something, I'll take it from here. All right, this comes from Jeff from Wanaki, Wisconsin. I hope I got that right.
I don't know.
It's got to be right. Wanaki, right? If not, that's what I'd be called. That's an awesome name.
Wanaki?
No, it's got to be Wanaki.
Wanaki?
No, it's
got to be Wanaki. Wanaki.
Wanaki?
Yeah.
That's kind of cool, too, I guess.
Not Wanaki.
Wanaki?
It
could be.
All right, we'll see. We'll have to find out.
All right, we'll find out. All right, so he was playing a $2, $4 limit hold'em, the scourge of limit hold'em, in my opinion. This is the classic no fold'em hold'em variety out there. And as quickly as you can progress past a 2-4 up into a 4-8, I have a 3-6 or 4-8. Please do.
Absolutely.
Because you will not have Hands of the Week like this one that's coming up. All right. He's playing at the his local room, the Ho-Chunk Casino in Wisconsin Dells. Go Packers.
The Wisconsin Dells. I feel like a Kennedy. That's from the 70s show. Sorry.
Yeah, you and Ashton Kutcher hang out all the time. All right, so the game was fairly loose. No surprise. And passive overall, that's also not a surprise. Pretty typical for a 2-4 game. This particular hand, he said there were 6 calls to him.
Wow.
When he's in the big blind.
Wow.
Now, what's shocking about this is there were only 6. I don't know who folded and why they folded, but that's very uncharacteristic at a 2-4 no fold'em hold'em game. All right, so he looks down the big blind, Chris, with 8 of hearts, 9 of diamonds. Remember, he had 6 calls to him. What are you doing?
I think there's enough money in there to do the pot odds thing. You don't need to raise to get a bigger pot out there. There's enough money that you're going to be able to draw to your hand if you make it. So, you know, if you get a draw on the flop. So,
yeah. And if this is a 20-40 limit game, maybe I'd suggest maybe raising. But
yeah.
All you're doing is building a big pot.
Yeah.
You're 9 high to get crushed.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So wrap the table.
Absolutely. And that's what he did. And the flop came out 2 of spades, 8 of spades, 9 of spades.
Dope.
Good and bad.
I'm taking a powder here. Go ahead, answer. Take on your little strategy call here. Go ahead.
All right, so the small blind bets out $2. We, of course, have a top 2 pair, but 3 spades out there. It's pretty scary. Small blind bets out, and so you're just not going to render any opinion from here on out.
I'm going to hear what you have to say first. And then I will make my decision. I'm kind of like today, I'm Paula Abdul, okay? I get to hear what Randy and okay. Kara right. say All before right. I make my judgment, and she always ends up saying what they say, so go ahead.
Okay, very good. I will raise here. We have top 2. It's not as catastrophic as a no limit where somebody can try to push you off its hand. So if somebody has a flush here, it's not going to cost you too much. But you might, by raising, you might find out whether that flush is really out there or not. And we've got a pretty strong hand. We got a redraw. So I'm going to raise here. In this field.
Now, what I like most about you today is you look fantastic.
Well, thank you.
You're dressed really well, and you know, your hair is done right, and you got your makeup on, and and you know, and I think Scott's right. I think that you should raise here to define your hand, to try to make it more difficult for someone on the left of you to call. So I'm going to agree with Scott and raise here, because even if we're wrong, we could still fill up.
Wow. Very good analysis.
Was that a good Paul
very
Abdul
good analysis. Yes.
Imitation? Okay.
Very nice. Very nice. I like it. And of course, now it's going to be two bets cold for these people behind you, which was
That's
a power tip that I learned today.
Yeah, I just said that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just repeating.
I
it
offered something.
Such a good tip. All right. So it's so that's exactly what our hero does. He raises. It's folded around to the cutoff, who calls the 4 bucks, and the small blind, who of course bet out, also calls. So 3 of us going
okay.
to the turn with a $24 pot after the rake.
Yeah.
All right. The turn is the Jack of Spades.
Yeah, we're in trouble here. Straights got their single spades beat us, which you know someone has one spade in their hand, mm-hmm. probably.
Yep, yep.
Well, we're in trouble here, so we're gonna slow down the action.
And right? Very quickly, our hero looks over and he says the player in the cutoff immediately glanced down at his chip stack. Tell. All right, and the small blind bets out $4. What do we do?
I think there's enough money in there to call to try to hit our 10 outs. Not 10 outs, 6 outs, or whatever it is. So, 4 outs.
Four
so,
outs.
4 outs, sorry.
We'll get there eventually.
10, 6, 4.
We're never good at division.
I don't know. I think you could probably get paid off here if you make your boat. So, I may have to call. Depends on the guy behind me, too. That's the thing. I don't want to get whipsawed either. But $4 to win 24, I'm getting 6 to 1 of my money. It's not really pot odds proper, but I don't know.
Wow.
What do you do?
You took a lot of my thunder here, because here's why I love limit hold'em. Because, you know, sometimes we get these hands of the week, and some of them are, let's be honest, pretty weak.
Yeah.
And I just wrote by, yeah, nice hand, woohoo,
yeah,
great
yeah.
pot.
Yeah, yeah.
And then some other ones, you know, I'll give some analysis. And this one, I found myself writing a lot, because it's just a fascinating hand, because I really, you can make a call, I mean, a point for folding, calling, or raising in this situation.
Yeah, I that's what I was thinking.
And that's awesome.
I was thinking fold or call. I wasn't thinking raising, but I was thinking I could actually get away from this hand.
Well, excellent, because let me tell you about raising here.
Yes.
All right, first of all, I mean, you could fold here because obviously I think you're behind at least one of your opponents, if not both at this point, and you're going to have to hit that 4-outer to win, and that's asking a lot even with the implied odds that you can get. And if the other guy also has a flush too, you could get into a raising war here, and you definitely don't want to do that
right.
on a draw. All right, so there's no shame in folding, I say. All right, now you could call, because again, the same thing, you think you're beat, and you're going to have to hit a 4-outer, And you're also doing some implied odds, thinking you might be able to pick up some bets on the end. Because in limit, you probably are going to get, you're more likely to get paid off in limit
right.
than you are in no limit.
Right.
So you can pick up some of those bets. All right, but here, Chris, ponder the raise.
I'm starting to see the genius in the raise.
Okay.
As long as somebody doesn't have the ace of spades or the king of spades, I see the genius in the raise.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Only one person can have the ace.
Right.
All right. So if neither of your opponents have it, likelihood? Probably not likely. But could be possible. Now they have to respect that you do,
mm-hmm.
even though you don't have any spades.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And if someone does have it, or a crazy king gets frisky, you'll get raised and have to hit, but you're debating between calling and raising anyhow, so you're going to have to hit anyhow, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that you have two barrels, a raise on the turn, and then a bullet on the river is what makes this a makeable play. You're giving a king high flush two times to really think about whether it's good or not.
Yeah, but this is no fold'em. They don't care.
It's true, but it's two
they
bets.
They can think you have the queen.
It's two bets.
Yeah, I know. I understand. And like I said, it's two bets to the other guy, but the guy who bet out could have the ace of spades already.
But here's a really cool thing. Let's say we raise and we hit.
That's
eight or nine.
That would be cool.
Now, playing this way, we're going to get an extra bet out of on the river because, like I said, we're probably going to get paid off on it before anyhow.
Yeah.
But now you're not representing the boat draw. You're representing the flush draw. And now
right.
you get somebody frisky behind you that thinks, hey, I'll represent the boat when you have the boat.
Or they actually have the ace of spades, and you get it for just one more bet on top of it. And then you hit your boat, and you're raised reward with them because they think you have the king of spades, and then you're really going to get paid off. All right, so what happens on the river?
Right,
what did we do?
So that's why I would raise. All right, now our hero, I believe, makes the call.
You believe it, or
yeah,
you?
Hold on.
You
lost my trick here.
I'm going to leave this part of the show. This is fun. I always take it out, but I'm leaving it in this week, so you can sit there.
All right, he was fairly certain that the cutoff was going to call. The small blind with a bet on the river was made flush, and he did all these pot odds, made all these ascensions, so he makes the call.
Okay. And what does the guy behind him do?
The cutoff also calls.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So now we're probably just fearful of the small. Of course, we got to hit anyhow to win.
Yeah.
But
so now it would be interesting to see what the raise would have done.
That's very true.
Yeah.
It's very true.
Let's go get the guys back and.
Yeah, it's reconvene.
Let's recreate
this hand. All right, the river, the eight of clubs.
Yes!
See, now if you would have raised.
Yes!
It's been exciting. It's still exciting.
Still exciting.
He's probably going to win this.
Just a huge more pot, though.
All right, small blind is not deterred. He bets out. Which I would expect if he is on the flush.
Now, here's an interesting dilemma, because do you raise and lose the guy behind you and only get one bet, and then hope the guy after him re-raises, or do you just call and hoping the guy in the end has the ace of spades and raises then, and then you get more bets? Very interesting dilemma
here. Well, if you just call, at most you're getting one more bet out, because the guy behind you is just going to call out, because you can't imagine he's going to raise, because the small blind you think has the best hand here.
Maybe.
The best flush, I mean.
Maybe.
So if you raise, though, then you know you're probably going to get a bet out of the small blind at least.
Right.
So it's the same amount, so it's just a matter of whether you're risking. And you might get the cutoff to come along, too.
Well, yeah, no, but what I was saying was you might, if by calling, you might get the cutoff guy to raise.
Yeah.
And then you might, you know what I mean, that might happen. You don't know. I guess you have to really know what he has.
I'd rather raise and take the shot of getting the, because you know you're getting that extra bet
out
of the small blind, and maybe you'll get re-raised by.
All right. Well,
that's
why
I would raise.
Yeah, you could raise. It just depends. If you knew the guy behind you really had a monster, you know, ace of spades or whatever, you might want to just call and see what he does. But yeah, I raise is probably the best.
Well,
way
it comes down to knowing your player too. And I, for some reason, I'm just thinking the small blind
has a better hand
out of the two. So. All right, so the small blind bets out. We do raise. The cutoff calls the two bets without hesitation. So, see?
Sweet.
You know what you're talking about.
Sweet.
And after the looking board for the 10 seconds, the small blind also calls the additional bet.
So you know you're good.
Shows our full house. And both of them muck their hands. Ha ha! That's why we play limit. And then Consensus starts mumbling and runs away from the table. Oh, if there's no limit, I could have pushed him off that hand.
That's right. My little four of spades would have done it. Well, that was a great hand. That was a lot of fun. Usually limit's boring, but that was exciting.
See? Limit can be exciting.
One last spin in the wheel this week.
That's true.
Here it goes.
And, Jeff, you win a lovely card protector from PokerFaces.tv. And send us your address there in Wanaki. Wisconsin.
Or you want to send it from Wanakee, that's fine too.
Or we can do that. Or maybe it's one of those, like, you know, Gloucester that does not pronounce anything like
nothing
it.
Nothing like
maybe
the way it's spelled.
Worcester, Wisconsin.
Worcester, yeah.
But anyhow, send us your address and we'll get that swag right out to you. And if you too want some swag, send us your hand of the week to podcast@antiantmagazine.com and we would love to spin the wheel for you.
That was a good show. Nice and tight.
Yeah.
Yeah. And hopefully we've done some damage control with your image. You know, people might start liking you and stroking your ego.
Yeah, I'm going to hire a PR agency here pretty soon, and maybe you'll see me on billboards, you know, surrounded by flowers and stuff.
I'm Chris Cassenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
It's Annie Duke, but I suggest you turn the volume on your phone down because I'm going to be yelling.